Officer and Todd Levin. Zahidu Sains are distinguished guests, ladies and gentlemen. Assalamu alaikum and a good afternoon. I'm delighted to be here today, particularly as this is the first time I've come to the Institute's function, but that I should be invited to speak on an occasion when the subject is one that does not in any way endear the organizers of today's function to me. But nevertheless, I take it as a serious issue, an issue that deserves to be debated and discussed fairly and objectively. I'm also very happy to be in the company of Prof. Anatole Levin, a distinguished scholar, an authority in his own right, and one whose book is considered a remarkable reflection of an intellectual's observations over the course of many years, during which he has interacted with Pakistan and its people. Ladies and gentlemen, coming to the topic at hand, let me begin by highlighting some of the conceptual aspects of the government's foreign policy, as well as by giving some concrete examples to demonstrate that far from being isolated, Pakistan's foreign policy is very much in the mainstream of current developments in the region and far beyond. We have a democracy. It is loud, shrill, highly vocal. We have a media that is equally, I would say, vociferous in its claims and its opinions. But we consider that all these are positive developments. The graveyard stillness of an authoritarian regime may be to the liking of some of our people and some of our so-called friends outside. But we, the people of Pakistan, believe that it is far more advantageous in the long run to go through this experience of democracy, democratic institutions, an independent judiciary, a vocal media, and thereby build a society and a culture that would be based on equity, on fairness, and on justice. Also, I would like to point out to you that even before the government came to power, it had in its manifesto very clearly stated. And what did it state? It stated that Pakistan, being at the crossroads of South Asia and Central Asia, its foreign policy would be deeply influenced by its economic considerations. The point that Mr. Zahid Hussain has made, and I will try to expand to that at a later stage. I would also like to point out that it is common for people to claim that there have been some setbacks, because no foreign policy can be a story of complete successes or of total failures. You have to bring the events and the initiatives taken over a period of time and reach a judgment that is fair, that is objective, and that takes into considerations the challenges confronting Pakistan. I think this impression of isolation could in fact be attributed to the fast pace of changes affecting Pakistan's extended neighborhood. Pakistan's location at the crossroads of South Asia, Central Asia, and the Middle East denies it the option of shutting itself off from events that are taking place. Ladies and gentlemen, as you are aware, even a cursory survey makes it obvious that truly extraordinary times and events are taking place. The promise, the expectation of a peace dividend arising out of the collapse of the Soviet Union and the emergence of a sole superpower has given way to deep disillusionment, disappointment, as the world today is riven with differences, disputes, in regions and beyond regions. The much hyped Arab Spring, wherein it was expected that the Middle Eastern countries, which had been primarily ruled by authoritarian regimes, would give way to democratic governments, have instead become centers of inter-tribal, inter-ethnic, inter-racial differences and disputes that have resulted in the death of hundreds of thousands of people. The American effort to bring in democracy by means of inflicting war on them have added to the turmoil of these regions. Please consider for yourself whether the Middle East today is better off after these foreign interventions, or are they worse off? Are we going to see a revision of the state frontiers that were determined exactly 100 years ago through a Franco-British arrangement known as the Sykes-Picot formula? Are we going to see states crumble and small non-state actors emerge to seize power? Closer home, let me remind you that the prospect of stability and peace in Afghanistan remains as elusive as ever, as pointed out by both of my distinguished speakers who have been here before. While historically emergence of a strong state in Central Asia in the past was followed by an invasion of the Indus Valley, this time it is the lack of a cohesive state in Afghanistan that is generating instability in our part of the world. Let me also point out, ladies and gentlemen, that it is not only the Pakistan Muslim League in government, but all the political parties in the country's mainstream who are resolute in their desire to overcome the bitter legacy of the long military dictatorships and to ensure that the country stabilizes both internally and in terms of its relations with foreign powers. We do recognize that an effective, stable, well-formulated foreign policy is a sine qua non for the achievement of democratic transformation. This is why you would remember that it has been one of our primary goals that it should not be merely the political relationship with foreign countries that the government should emphasize. As has rightly been pointed out by Zahid Hussain, the world today is based on economic linkages. We see these economic linkages either bring prosperity to nation states or they deprive those countries of what they Let me come back to where I was. I was stating that there is a abiding interest in establishing economic linkages with all countries and primarily so with our neighbors. You speak of the reach out to neighbors. Can there be a more sincere, a more serious initiative than the one taken by the Prime Minister soon after coming to power? Did we not reach out to our neighbors both on the eastern and western wings? Was this initiative not based on the realization that Pakistan would not be able to achieve peace and stability at home if we did not have peaceful relationship with our neighbors? But the success of these initiatives is dependent not merely on one party. There has to be certain degree of reciprocity. You cannot base relationship merely on your own wishes. So many of you here have been members of the diplomatic corps for many, many years. Your own experience will tell you that however serious your initiative for peaceful relations may be, unless the other side also recognizes that there is an inherent advantage for them in responding and reciprocating, such initiatives are not going to bear the kind of fruit that you would want them to bear. In the case of Afghanistan, particularly after the establishment of the National Unity Government, we extended a strong hand of friendship, a message of solidarity, recognizing that Afghanistan needed peace and stability. And we would work towards that goal not as a favor to Afghanistan, but as a favor to ourselves. Because we do recognize that there can be no peace in Pakistan as long as there is no peace in Afghanistan. We did arrive at certain arrangements. We felt that President Ashraf Ghani's heart was in the right place. We believed that we could do business with him. But there are always other forces who may not want to see this relationship move forward. In the past few weeks and months, we have had difficulties, particularly on the border. And yet I want to tell you that the meeting between the two heads of state that took place in Tashkent last week was a very productive one. I'm very confident that the decisions taken by them will bring about mechanisms and arrangements that should restore a degree of normalcy and possibility of further progress towards understanding between the two countries. I would be remiss if I was not to tell you that the issue of border management triggered this spate of misunderstanding. But border management is being done not in order to close the border with Afghanistan, but in order to ensure that the flow both were towards Pakistan and towards Afghanistan should be orderly, should be documented, should be managed in a manner that not only facilitates the travelers but also ensures the safety and security of the two countries. For this purpose, we are establishing proper, well-organized, professionally manned check posts. We also intend eventually to have the Pakistan-Afghanistan border fenced. We believe that good fences make good neighbors. It is the absence of a well-defined border that is at the root of many of our problems. In relations with Afghanistan, we have also made it very clear that the repatriation, the return of the Afghan refugees is extremely important. We have hosted them for over 30 years. It is time for them to return home in conditions of dignity and honor. We are urging the international community to assist Afghanistan in rehabilitating the Afghan refugees who go back to their country. China came in for discussion by both the earlier speakers. Professor Anatole Levin stated that it is on paper. I beg to differ, particularly in front of a scholar of his repute. But having been deeply involved in all stages of the negotiations that led to the signing of the CPEC-related agreements, I can assure you that they are not merely on paper. I can personally take you, if you so desire, to show you where exactly work has not only begun, it is proceeding at a fast pace. Moreover, these agreements and arrangements are not merely confined to 3 years or 5 years. They are the harbingers of agreements that will continue to take place, that will continue to be finalized and arrived at in coming years. Because these projects are not merely meant to benefit Pakistan, they are meant to benefit the entire region. They are going to be a web of connectivity. Zahid Hussain spoke of the absence of connectivity. I want to assure him that that is a high priority area for us. We are not merely going to connect Pakistan and China through the Gwadar-Kashgar motorway. We are going to take a motorway from Peshawar to Central Asia. By building, Pakistan will build the Peshawar-Kabul motorway that will connect to the Kabul-Kunduz motorway that will then get into Kyrgyzstan. That's option number two. Option number three, I want to tell you that the Gwadar-Kashgar motorway, there will be a diversion of 70 kilometers from this particular motorway that will go into Tajikistan. That's the third project. Fourth project, I want to tell you that between, there will be a motorway between Gwadar and Chabahar. So Gwadar and Chabahar are not rivals. They are not competing, they are complementing, because there is more than enough traffic for not only these two ports, but even another two ports if they were to be built. Talking of Iran, because that's a very important neighbor. Relations with Iran are historic. They are deeply rooted in our culture, in our religion, in our language. Visits by foreign heads of state or government, we do not feel are going to disturb a relationship that has seen difficulties, that has stood the test of time. And now that sanctions have been lifted, we are already looking forward at enhanced economic and commercial relations with Iran. The Iran-Pakistan pipeline is also very much on the front burner. And for this purpose, we have already signed an agreement with a Chinese company to build a pipeline from Gwadar to Faisalabad. So that you will be left with only 70 kilometers missing between the Iranian point of delivery and the Pakistani point of receiving that gas. We are working on it. But there were two inhibiting factors that you should know of. One is the fact that while the world thinks that the sanctions have been lifted on Iran, the truth is that the sanction is still very much on Iran on all dollar-related transactions. On all dollar-related transactions. And the Iranians have been taking it up with the Americans repeatedly. So there are very few investment companies, very few banks that are willing to enter into any arrangements on economic projects with Iran and Pakistan, because we deal with it in dollars. That's problem number one. Problem number two is, there is always the fear. It may be a small fear, but there is a fear that the sanctions could be triggered again if the winds of change were to take place in the United States. So we are dealing with it cautiously. But our resolve to move ahead with this pipeline is strong and firm and irrevocable. Let me come back to relations with India. As I told you earlier, we did take the initiative. And this is an initiative which is close to the heart of the Prime Minister, because even in his earlier term, 97-99, we did take the initiative. It was his initiative that brought the Indian Prime Minister, Mr. Vajpayee, to Lahore, which resulted in the Lahore Declaration that contained a roadmap for settling Pakistan-India differences. We wanted to pick up the thread from where it was left in 99. But a relationship has to be based on mutuality of interest. It cannot be a unidirectional endeavor. We cannot do it at the cost of our own national interests. Pakistan-India relationship is well known to all of you. For those of you who think that we have become security oriented, you are obviously oblivious of the history. No individual and neither can a state be totally blind to what has gone in the past. Going beyond our immediate neighborhood, our relations with the Middle East, the Arab countries, is excellent. We have participated in the Saudi-led coalition against counterterrorism. We have just signed an agreement with Qatar for taking another 100,000 Pakistanis workers as a special case into Qatar. We have just signed an agreement for the purchase of Mushaq aircraft by Qatar. We are having a high-level delegation coming from Bahrain. Let me move to the other direction, towards Central Asia. There has been greater and more intense interaction between Pakistan and Central Asian states than any time before. And I know Central Asia very well. I walk on my foot as a student through many of these towns and cities. So I know Central Asia. And I know exactly where Central Asia was. And I know what Central Asia means to Pakistan. These connectivity projects that Zahid Hussain was talking of will really matter in terms of the relationship that we are envisaging with Central Asia. The signing of the CASA, Central Asia, South Asia 1000 megawatt power project, will bring in energy from Kyrgyzstan and Tajikistan, and the Tajiks have promised us that most likely in 2 years' time they will be able to provide us 4000 megawatts of power. We have also signed and the work has started on TAPI, Turkmenistan, Afghanistan, Pakistan, Dash Pipeline project. Now these projects were on the paper. They were on files for the last 25 years. But it is only now after 25 years that agreements have been finalized and signatures have been placed and work has actually started on these projects. We believe that these connectivity projects with Central Asia will bring in energy from these countries to Pakistan and enable them to take advantage of the motorways to send their own exports through the port of Gwalior. So it's a win-win situation for both sides. Only a few days ago, we signed the memorandum of obligations with the SCO. It is the formal entry of Pakistan and India into this important regional organization that is focused on economic growth and development, on counter-terrorism, counter-narcotics and connectivity. It's a very important landmark because we had been seeking this membership of this organization since 2005. We have finally gotten it. It's an important move. And every single Central Asian state was in the forefront of supporting our candidature. Pakistan is isolated, and yet, when the NSG met in Seoul a few days ago, Pakistan's candidature, which according to the media was submitted only a few days ago, which I want to tell you on which we were working for months, was given the same consideration as the candidature of another country for which a superpower's president and secretary of state were personally lobbied. And by the way, China alone was not with us. There were 11 other states from Europe, from Central Asia and from Latin America that supported Pakistan's candidature. This is not on account of isolation. This is on account of active, intensive interaction with these countries over months and years, including letters by the Prime Minister, including telephone calls by the advisor and myself to our counterparts in these countries. We participated in the nuclear security summits. Pakistan's position was defended and upheld by the participating states. President Obama, in his concluding press statement and remarks to the press at the conclusion of the Washington summit, upheld the position adopted by Pakistan, which incidentally was criticized by a neighboring country. But they did recognize that Pakistan's position was based on very concrete considerations. Ladies and gentlemen, we are living in difficult times. Professor Anatole Levin has referred to it, and so has Zahid Hussain. Huge transformations are taking place. Sitting in my hotel room in London, I was kept awake all night by this referendum. It was unbelievable. The uncertainty, the alarm, the anxiety that was generated by this particular event. This will have its own repercussions. We have to monitor them. And we did so on the very first day. Yesterday, a meeting took place amongst the stakeholders, because we want to very closely watch it. I must refer to Russia. We have so many, my distinguished senior colleague Riaz Spoker has been there, and Zamir has been there, and I have been there on multiple occasions. I think I must be the only one who was packed off to Moscow every time they couldn't find anyone. We have taken special measures to enhance our ties with Russia. Russia is an important country. Russia is also a neighboring country in the sense that Russia has very strong interest in peace and stability of Central Asia and South Asia. We have reached out to the Russian leadership. There have been more high-level visits in the last 3 years between Moscow and Islamabad than in the previous 10 years. For the first time, we have an MOU on military exchanges with Russia, offering to sell us sophisticated weapons systems. Russia, incidentally, has also signed an agreement to build a pipeline from Karachi, short of Lahore, which is known as, for some reason, it is known as the North-South Pipeline. A Russian company has signed this $2 billion agreement that will help bring in the LNG that is being imported to Pakistan into the upper parts of the country. The Prime Minister's own meeting with President Putin was very warm and highly productive. Both sides affirmed the need to further enhance their cooperation, particularly in view of the developments taking place in the Middle East, in South Asia and Southeast Asia. And finally, ladies and gentlemen, before I close, all of you are scholars. You are men and women of letters. You would not be unaware of what is happening in Eastern Europe. How NATO is moving towards the borders of Russia. What that is doing to Russia. How Russia and China have strengthened the relationship. What the United States is doing in response to it. These are massive changes. These are transformations that will have effects and after effects for decades to come. In such periods of changes and flux, there is a degree of uncertainty. There are no definite timelines to these developments. But the task of those sitting in the Foreign Office is to, first of all, gather information, analyze the information, discuss with all the stakeholders. I repeat in response to what Zahid Hussain has said, all the stakeholders. Yes, we do consult all of them. We think they are as much a player in both the formulation and execution of foreign policy as the Foreign Office itself. We do consult the Commerce Ministry, and Humayun Akhtar himself was the Commerce Minister for many years. We do consult the Economic Affairs Ministry. All these ministries are consulted, all institutions are consulted in the process of both the formulation and the execution of foreign policy, which is why you achieve successes. Yes, occasionally it may appear that you are faced with a difficult situation. But those difficult situations are not one to deter us. They do not discourage us. They spur us on to greater efforts, because our task is to promote and project the national interest of Pakistan in the best way possible. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen.